The McFadden brothers have been frontline entertainers in this town for years because they do so much. They sing, tap, play sax and trumpet, and here, around here, they're known as Pure Entertainment. Here's what they sound like.
In a lifetime, a man has a moment.
One wonderful moment when fate takes his hand.
And this is that moment.
Our once in a lifetime,
we can explore a new and exciting land.
Hey,
those once in a lifetime,
I feel
just like a giant.
I'll soar
like an eagle. In a lifetime, we're gonna do great things.
And let me introduce the McFadden brothers to you now. Lonnie McFadden doesn't have a mustache, and he plays trumpet, and that's how I'm keeping you guys apart. Lonnie, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Ronnie McFadden has a stash, and he plays saxophone. How are you, Ronnie?
How you doing, Steve?
So who's older? Who wants to admit it? Yeah. You're both pointing at each other, right? Yeah, that guy. What is that how you guys work it out?
I tell the truth, though.
Yeah, all right. Well, your father was Smiling Jimmy McFadden, and he had you guys learning tap when you were 3 and 4 years old. Did you really ever have a choice but to become entertainers, Ronnie?
No. In fact, that was like playtime with Daddy.
Yeah. You know,
we didn't realize that we were really learning to do anything.
He was just messing around.
Yeah. We were just hanging out with Daddy, and that's what Daddy did. He said, do this. You know, and before we knew it, I mean, because he made it so much fun. He said, yeah, man, you did it. Yeah. And so it was just fun. You know, and before we knew it, I think we was 5 and 6. We did our own recital.
I was going to ask you, you were 5 or 6, and you guys were already doing a neighborhood thing, and you sang. You did jokes and you did everything at that thing.
Yeah, we sang and joked.
And did tap?
We played piano and organ and we tap danced.
When you were 5, how did that work, Lonnie? I mean, you're 5 or 6 years old. Do you remember it?
I totally remember it. It was at the, I don't know what they call it now. They just refurbished it, but the YMCA
on
19th and Paseo. Yeah.
I know right where that is.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Right by 18th and Vine, yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, it was in there, and I remember it was hot. I remember the windows were open. I remember Ronald was so shy at the time that he just looked out the window the whole time and was grinning, and everybody, I was so jealous because everybody left out of there talking about, oh, he's so good. He played the whole concert looking out the window. And I was always so serious. And so I was like Beethoven or something. And I was playing the real difficult things and nobody cared.
Yeah. But you were able to pull it off even at 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
Were you nervous? Were you like freaked?
I remember doing it, but I think I was just so tickled. You know, the people was listening to us. You know?
Yeah.
It was just, you know, so I looked out the window because I was the kind of guy that, you know how when you're kids, you always play hide and seek. You know, I was the kind of guy that if I hide and you go past me, you didn't see me, I start cracking up. So I give myself away. So I just looked out the window so I wouldn't give myself away.
What did your dad have in mind for you guys? I mean, was he thinking Jackson 5, only a smaller version of it? Or were the Jackson 5 even around in those days?
No.
Yeah. You were ahead of them.
We were ahead. Well, did I say that actually?
I'm not that old. That was before my time.
Yeah. That's the correct answer. Yeah. There you go.
Well, yeah. I accidentally told the truth, but I think that my dad just enjoyed that part of his life. See, he had stopped dancing when he was raising us. He was just working at the post office, but he still had all these friends that were jazz musicians, and we had all these stories that all these guys used to tell. I mean, we met Jay McShann in our mom and dad's dining room. We met so many.
I always wish I had met him. But of course, I went to his concerts, but I wish we had him in here at least once because he was just such an amazing guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's the way we grew up. I mean, the Norman Rockwell Christmas scene is somebody's mom at the piano and sitting around singing carols. We had a whole rhythm section. I mean, sometimes Betty and Milt Abel would be over there, and and I mean, this guitar player named Wimpy, which was one of Charlie Parker's best buddies, and I mean, we grew up hearing about all this all our life. I mean, these were my father's friends. So we didn't even know. We knew more about Charlie Parker by the time we were 10 years old than I've read in any of these books.
Really?
I even could tell you stories that they don't have in the books.
I bet you. Well, what do you know about Charlie Parker? Because I'm, you know, Chuck Mack has a new book. Well, okay. There's the issue, right? You have to wait till the show ends and the good stuff's going to come out.
Yeah. That's the stuff that the musicians know.
Yeah. Well, that must have been, but it was just normal for you having these people in your house then, right?
Oh yeah, it was and our next door neighbor was a bass player too. So Christmas, the jam session would, well, Christmas Eve, the jam session was at our house, and New Year's Eve, it was at our neighbor's house. You know, so all the musicians would just come by, and it, you know, before you know it, everybody's jamming. You know.
Yeah. Did you stay in touch with those guys over the years?
Yeah, a lot of, well, you know, a lot of them have passed away. Right. You know, because my dad's friends were like Fats Dennis and, you know, Hurley Dennis.
Yeah.
Oh, golly.
You know, Marvel Minor. Yeah. Wow, so many. Baby Lovett, Junior Chisholm.
This is the wrong thing to say to contemporary performers like yourselves, but, you know, some folks, even myself, I sort of miss that. That gritty Kansas City sound that came up, the Scamps, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, early 90s, that was still around here. And some of that sound, it seems to me, you know, Lonnie, is still gone. It's gone, and maybe it's gone forever.
I hope you're not right. I'd like to think that some of that is embedded in the way that I play. I would like to think so, only because the way that I learned how to improvise or play, whatever we want to call it, was by going to the foundation and hanging out and people like Piggy Minor and all those guys suggesting different things that we practice on. And my dad had us listening to Charlie Parker and Louis Armstrong from day one. I cannot remember a time when I didn't know what Louis Armstrong or Charlie Parker sounded like. Mm-hmm.
Did he amaze you guys, Ronnie? When you were kids, were those great memories for you?
Yeah, because I don't know if he did it meaning this way, but he created the foundation probably for both of our styles.
Yeah,
you know, because he would put on Louis Armstrong and tell Lonnie, listen to the tone, you know, and then he put on Charlie Parker, listen to the tone, listen to what he's saying, you know, he's saying something, you know. Mm-hmm. And so from being kids trying to understand what our dad was talking about, you know, I guess maybe years later, we figured out, it's like, that's what he was talking about.
It took a while,
you know, but
right?
it stayed here, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It stayed with us all through our learning, everything, you know. And so now it's just fun, man.
Yeah. Well, the McFadden brothers are in the house. They perform at 9:15 Saturday evening at Harmon Park at 77th and Mission Road in Prairie Village. They're the headliners for this year's Prairie Village Jazz Fest. They'll be playing with the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra. Okay, I got to ask you, Lonnie, you two got to middle school, that wrecking ground for so many childhood aspirations.
Uh-oh.
And you both walked away from tap dancing at that time. Why?
Because we were in middle school. And it's like, okay, you have to understand. We grew up.
I understand. I remember middle school.
Contrary to what most people believe, we didn't grow up in Mission Hills. We grew up in the inner city, and being tap dancers at Lincoln Junior when we went would have made us way better fighters than we are.
Yeah.
And we realized that. And then you starting to like girls, and that's basically when we picked up the trumpet and the saxophone. I mean, we were playing, taking piano lessons and tap dancing.
And neither one of those things was cool.
Neither one. Mm-hmm. Neither one. So, but both of us, you know, you're at that age, you want to start the girls. You like girls. And so I picked up the trumpet. Ronald picked up the saxophone. Everybody liked Kool & the Gang. Everybody liked James Brown. Everybody, as we got a little older, everybody liked Chicago and Tower of Power and all these groups. So this is what we started doing. We started playing all of that kind of music.
Well, did it work? With the girls?
Well, I no comment.
It's a long time ago. Steve, he's trying to get you tap dancing around.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
But your dad had you tap dancing at three or four. He's having you learn piano early on for that foundation you're talking about.
Yeah.
But middle school, I remember when my sons went to middle school, suddenly the trumpet for my sons was like, we're not doing that anymore. That's not how it worked. But that still worked for you in middle school.
Yeah. It was a different time. It was like there were a lot of bands around here, basement bands, garage bands, whatever you want to call it, and they were actually making money. So it's like by the time I was like 13 years old, I heard this band, Clyde and Them and Her. It was Betty Jo Miller was in it, who was Betty and Milt's daughter. And she was in this band. They were all like in between 17 and 19 years old, and they were unbelievable. Back then when we had real jazz festivals like the one we're going to have now, only they had like Maynard Ferguson, they had Dizzy Gillespie, they had, I can't remember. Anyway, Clyde and Them and Her was on that, and they're the ones that stole the show. Because you got these 17 to 19. Anyway, this inspired me so much that. And so there were a lot of bands around here. They were just the best. Yeah. But there were a lot of bands. And so it was cool. Like now, I guess the kids, they drop their pants below their butt and they rap.
Yeah.
I don't know. But kids do what other kids do.
Yeah.
That's what we did.
Well, Lonnie, you began your own band as a teenager. It was called Lonnie and the Band.
Yeah.
Couldn't you come up with a better name than that? Lonnie and the Band? I mean, really?
It
had to be Lonnie something.
Here we go.
And we couldn't be like the Lonnie and the Others or Lonnie and the Dogs.
Lonnie and the Band. How did that work? You were in that band.
Yes, I was in that. Tyrone Clark was in it.
Oh, Tyrone Clark, sure.
Yeah.
Still
Will
plays
Matthews,
in town.
Yeah. Will Matthews with the Basie Band.
Yeah.
Tim Williams, who was a guy that left here playing trombone with Art Blakey. And then
John Brown,
he's in New York now. He's done a lot of traveling over in Europe.
Yeah, he was with Sun Ra.
So how long did Lonnie and the Band last?
10 years.
Yeah.
10 years.
We played in Japan more than we did in Kansas City.
Why is that?
It was a different time. And back then, Kansas City, let me say this. I've seen this city go through a lot of changes, and I'm a lot older than I'll admit that I am. And having said that, back when we had our band, no matter how much we tried and how good we may have been, we couldn't play on the plaza. We couldn't play in Westport. Yeah. An all-black band trying to get a gig in Westport, you know, and I hear all the history about Jay McShann and Charlie Parker and them playing on the plaza back in those days.
Because they made it on the plaza.
Right. But the rules were different. It's like they knew good and well. You don't walk out of here with a Caucasian woman. You don't fraternize with the customers. And so we grew up in a time where this is starting to happen. I remember along the same lines, just to go in a discotheque that was here in Kansas City called Pogo's, I had to have three forms of ID. I had to have a passport, I had to have my driver's license, and because we were playing in nightclubs, all of us had a liquor card. You used to be able to get a liquor permit to play in nightclubs when you're 16, 17 years. I was one of the fortunate black people that had three official forms of ID. So it's like, I'm just saying that was the tone of the cities back in the 70s, but we were in Japan all the time.
I mean, so how did you manage that? How did you manage your own feelings about that, Lonnie, as you dealt with that?
Well, I was fortunate that my parents never dealt with racism. We never heard, I mean, we were here when Martin Luther King got killed and when Kennedy got killed and all of that. And I think everything starts at home. My mom and dad never put a racist undertone about Martin Luther King's death, about anything. So a lot of the anger that was going on that I was even starting to feel because of the things I was starting to experience, you know, as I got older, 16, 17, and like when I had the band, I had to deal with a lot of things that will never happen now. It would never happen now, and I thank God for it. But I think my parents gave me the best role model because they never once heard anything angry depicted about any other race. In my house, either you're a good person or a bad person. You were not a black person. They didn't deal with that.
Let me go to a phone call here from David from Kansas City, Missouri, who's an old buddy. David, good morning.
Morning to you. What's up, Ronnie and Lonnie?
Come on, man.
Talk to me, David.
Lincoln Junior, Lincoln High School.
Uh-oh.
Hey, I was going to ask y'all, where's Big Tim at? I just heard you mention Timothy Williams.
He's in New York.
He told me he was in New York.
Last time I talked to him, he was in New York.
He plays at the Cotton Club every Monday night.
No, sir. Yes. Hey, y'all going to have a concert in Mission somewhere?
Yes.
It's on Mission Road?
No,
70. Go ahead, Steve.
The Prairie Village Jazz Fest is at 77th and Mission Road, and the McFadden Brothers play at 9:15 Saturday night. It's in Prairie Village, David.
That'll work. And you heard anything from Kevin Mahogany?
Not much. But we're going to have to catch up later.
David, we'll catch up later. So I'm glad to have your call, David. Thank you. So what did you two decide to come together and form the McFadden Brothers, the two of you?
Actually, when the band broke up, we were left looking at each other, twiddling our thumbs, thinking, what are we going to do?
Yeah, I bet.
So it's ironic. You know, I just said, well, let's do what we started doing. You know, because when we started in entertainment, our dad had us singing and tap dancing together.
Yeah.
And so we decided to do that, one, because it was easier, because we didn't have to practice with a whole band all the time. You know, we just get charts written, you know, and we get the right musicians that we need, you know, and we make sure that we're together, you know. Plus, that's the only thing we could do.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for the music, Ronnie, what would you be doing?
Oh, man.
Or you don't want to think about it.
Well, yeah, the music is what keeps me sane.
Is it?
Yeah, it's... Because that's, you know, they've got this saying, you're going to work all your life, so you may as well do something that you love, you know. And I have done a few things. I mean, I've worked in technical support with computers. I've worked as a teacher. But the fact that I was performing is what kept me sane, you know. That's my life.
It seems like part of your DNA now.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to another track from the McFadden Brothers. Let me see. We're going to listen to In the Basement here, okay?
Yeah, that's Lonnie's song.
what a great track. What a great track. How'd that come about?
Well, Lonnie wrote that. I'll let him tell you the story.
Where'd you get it? In the basement.
Well, that's the name of this wonderful room our mom had our band to practice in when we were 17. We had Lonnie in the band back with Willie and Tyrone and everybody. It's like we were playing all the Kool and the Gang stuff, but like we said earlier, jazz was always around at our house. We were always listening to Count Basie and Charlie Parker and all these people. So It's like even though we weren't quote unquote jazz musicians, we all of us had a love and appreciation for it. I mean, after practice, we'd all sit around and listen to John Coltrane and Charlie Parker and compare their different styles and listen to Thelonious Monk and compare it with Count Basie. And I mean, so when I wrote that song, it was the most natural thing in the world to call it the place that we spend all our time.
Well, was it always destined, Ronnie, that you two would wind up playing together? Was there a time when you began to move apart and do your own things?
I think it was. Because actually, when Lonnie was 16, he started traveling with Clyde Nim and her. I was actually too young. And I looked young. Lonnie was old and he looked old.
They're still working through the age thing.
So anyway, actually, after Lonnie was with them a while, he actually quit because I wasn't in the band. And he's so used to playing with me. And all our life, we just been playing together. You know, it's.
How do you work out disagreements, Ronnie? What do you do?
He knows I'm right.
Yeah.
It's understood.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll go with that.
Miss Crane tweets us with a serious question. She writes, so no racism exists in Kansas City's music scene today?
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't say that.
That was
good. Yeah, I'm glad because I'm not trying to say that. What I am saying is things are so much better. What I am saying is there was a time when I was a young man and I was with the mother of my first child, and we were riding bicycles through the plaza, and the policeman followed us the entire time that we're on the plaza at 8, 6, 7 miles per hour through every turn, until we actually left the plaza. What I am saying is that doesn't happen now. What I am saying is that back then I would go into a store like Rothschild's or like, I can't even call the names, but those big men's stores that were on the plaza. Jack Henry's and all these places. I would go in those stores and the security guard was not discreet, you know, sitting across. He would stand right next to me and start folding shirts. And then I'd go over to the suits and he'd stand right next to me and he'd start looking through the suits. That does not happen now. Oh. I'm saying that I can have an all-black band on the plaza now because now they don't care about that. Yeah. I'm not saying it's fair the way.
Yeah, Ronnie, just quickly before you guys go, you guys once shared a bill with the great Miles Davis. Did you meet him? Did you talk to him? Was there any, or was he just in a world unto himself?
Well, I'll put it this way. We say, hey, how you doing, Miles? Can we get an autograph? And we got back.
Don't say it on the air. I know what he's going to say. I've read enough about him to know what he said.
No, actually, I think he looked at us and kept on going.
Yeah, just didn't pay any attention.
Well, you know, and after a while, we from talking to different other musicians, they just said, you know, Miles Davis is a beautiful cat, but he just, you know, he's to himself, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't bother him.
I didn't. It was not a cold thing. I don't know how to explain it where you automatically understand sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got the vibe. Yeah. Let me just say the McFadden Brothers again play at 9:15 Saturday night at Harmon Park. They're the headliners in this year's Prairie Village Jazz Fest, 77th and Mission Road in Prairie Village. They'll be playing with the Kansas City Jazz Orchestra. You guys were great. Lonnie, Ronnie, thanks so much for coming in.
So good to have you.